such thing as a good man nor a scoundrel. They are just the children of one father, and as sinners go, they are all the same, and their salvation will be as such. And it is waiting for them. It is waiting for you. It is waiting for all of us.
Major Barbara by George Bernard Shaw. Episode 2.
And here is the question I want you to ask yourself, my good people. Where do I want to spend eternity? Mr. Brontë O'Brien Price here has asked himself that very question.
That I have, Major Barbara and Miss Jenny.
And is here today to confess.
Hooray! Let's hear your story, brother.
Come on, Mr. Price.
I, Brontë O'Brien Price, some of you will know me by the name of Snobby, am ashamed to confess I used to blaspheme and gamble.
Oh, shame.
And whop my poor old mother something terrible.
Oh, no.
Yes, I did. Even though she was a good and pious woman, what taught me my prayers at her knee. I used to come home drunk and haul her out of bed by her snow-white hairs and lamb into her with the iron poker from the fireplace.
But you've repented now, haven't you,
Snobby? Glory be hallelujah, I have!
And your path to heaven is assured. Oh, please, please give generously to keep our shelter open and to save sinners like Mr. Price.
God bless you, Major Barbara!
Bless you, Snobby!
Goodbye, and God bless you all! Oh, come on, everyone, let's get back to the shelter. Oh, you did so terribly well, Mr. Price.
It was having the weight of my sins lifted off me that made me fearless in my confession.
Oh, Mr. Price, that's thrilling!
Kind words, Miss Hill. I could almost be glad of my past wickedness if I could believe that it would help to keep others straight.
So it will, Snobby. Thank you, everyone. Your playing was inspiring.
Thank you, Major.
Dad, Dolly, we've just had a splendid experience meeting at the other gate in Cripps Lane. I wish you'd have been there.
Well, good for you, Barbara.
It would have been something to see, I have no doubt.
Oh, what a crowd. My tambourine is almost filled with money. I'll count how much.
Glad I could help, Miss Jenny. I'll give you a hand.
1 shilling, 2... What have you got there, Mr. Price? Halfpence?
Well, I thought it was going to roll off the table. Here.
3, 4, and 10 pence, Major Barbara.
Oh, Snobby, if you'd have given your poor mother just one more kick, we should have got the whole 5 shillings.
If she heard you say that, miss, she'd be sorry I didn't. What a joy it will be to her when she hears I'm saved.
Shall I contribute the odd 2 pence, Barbara? The millionaire's mite, eh? I can afford a little more if you press me.
2 million millions would not be enough. There is bad blood on your hands, and nothing but good blood can cleanse them. Dolly, you must write another letter for me to the papers.
Oh, again?
Now, I know that you don't like it, but it must be done. Starvation this winter is beating us. Everybody is unemployed. The General says that we must close this shelter if we can't get more money. I force the collections at the meetings until I'm ashamed, don't I, Snobby?
It's a fair treat to see you work it, miss. Not a cheap jack on Mile End Waste could touch you at it.
But I wish we could do without it. I'm getting at last to think more of the collection than of the people's souls. I want to convert people, not to always be begging for the army. Where I'd die sooner than beg for myself.
Genuine unselfishness is capable of anything, my dear.
Yes, isn't it? Here, give me the money, Jenny. I'll put it away.
Here, Major.
Mephistopheles, Machiavelli.
Somewhat harsh, Mr. Cousins.
How are we to feed them? I can't talk religion to a man with bodily hunger in his eyes.
Major, dear.
Don't comfort me, Jenny. It will be all right. We shall get the money.
How?
By praying for it, of course. Mrs. Baines says she prayed for it last night, and she has never prayed for it in vain. Never once.
We shall see.
We shall. Major. Major Barbara, here's that man back again.
What man?
The man that hit me. Oh, I hope he's come back to join us.
Hello, Bill. Back, are you? Well, has Todger paid you out for poor Jenny's jaw?
No, he ain't.
I thought your jacket looked a bit torn.
I would agree. It's torn.
So? It's torn. Come off from being on the ground in Parkridge's corner in Canning Town.
Not on your knees, Bill. That would have done you a lot of good.
I was saving another man's knees at the time. He was kneeling on me head, so he was.
Who was kneeling on your head?
Todger Fairmiles was. He was praying for me. Praying comfortable with me as a carpet. So was my old girl, Mog. So was the old blooming meeting. And her bloke, big, big bloke, kneeling with all his weight on me.
Well, you must have done something to him first.
I did what I said I'd do. I spat in his eye. Oh. He looks up at the sky and says, "Hold on, I should be found worthy to be spat upon for the gospel's sake," he says. And Mog says, "Glory, hallelujah." And then he called me brother and damned me. There, Major Barbara. You're satisfied now?
Wish I'd been there, Bill.
Me and all.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Walker.
Don't you go being sorry for me. You're no cool. Listen here. I broke your jaw.
No, it didn't hurt me. Indeed, it didn't. Except for a moment. It was only that I was frightened.
I don't want to be forgiven by you or by anybody. What I did, I'll pay for. I'll try to get my own jaw broke to satisfy you.
Oh, no.
I had £2 saved against the frost, and I've a pound of it left. A mate of mine last week had words with a Judy he's going to marry. He gave a what for, and he's been fined 15 bob. He had a right to hit her, because they're going to be married. But I had no right to hit you. So, put another 5 bob on and call it a pound's worth. Take it. Let's have no more of your forgiving and praying and your major jawing me. Let what I done be done and paid for, and let there be an end of it.
Major, may I take a little of it for the army?
The army is not to be bought.
Are you sure, Barbara?
Of course, Dolly. Well, we want your soul, Bill, and we'll take nothing less.
Me and my few shillings ain't good enough for you. You're an Earl's granddaughter, you are. Nothing less than £100 for you.
Come, Barbara, you could do a great deal of good with £100. If you will set this gentleman's mind at ease by taking his pound, I will give the other 99.
Blimey. Oh,
£99?
You're too extravagant, Papa. Bill offers 20 pieces of silver. All you need offer is the other 10. That will make the standard price to buy anybody who is for sale. But I am not, and the army is not. You'll never have another quiet moment, Bill, till you come round to us. You can't stand out against your salvation.
I can't stand out against musical wrestlers and artful-tongued women. I've offered to pay. Take it or leave it. There it is.
Snobby. Snobby Price.
What is it, General Baines?
Your mother's at the front door asking for you. She's heard about your confession.
Oh.
Go, Mr. Price, and pray with her.
I couldn't face her now, Major Barbara. With all the weight of my sins fresh on me, I'll slip out the back gate and make my way home so she can find her son waiting for her in prayer.
Goodbye, Snobby, and thank you. You see how we take the anger and bitterness out of their hearts, Papa?
Clearly, my dear.
Everyone, Barbara, I have good news. Most wonderful news. My prayers have been answered. I told you they would, Jenny, didn't I?
You did, General Baines. Have we got enough money to keep the shelter open?
I hope we shall have enough to keep all the shelters open. Lord Saxmundham has promised us £5,000.
Oh, hooray! Glory!
If
what?
If 5 other gentlemen will give £1,000 each to make it up to £10,000.
Who is Lord Saxmundham? I've never heard of him.
A new creation, my dear. You have heard of Sir Horace Bodger?
Bodger? Do you mean the distiller? Bodger's whiskey?
That is the man. He is one of the greatest of our public benefactors. He restored the cathedral at Hackington. They made him a baronet for that. He gave £500,000 to the funds of his party, and they made him a baron for that.
What will they give him for the £5,000?
There is nothing left to give him, cousins. So the £5,000, I should think, is to save his soul.
Heaven grant that it may. Mr. Undershaft, you have some very rich friends. Can't you help us towards the other £5,000? We're going to hold a great meeting this afternoon at the Assembly Hall in the Mile End Road. If I could only announce that one gentleman had come forward to support Lord Saxmundham, others would follow.
Mrs. Baines, I can't disappoint you, and I can't deny myself the satisfaction of making Bodger pay up. You shall have your £5,000.
Father, thank God.
You don't thank me?
Oh, sir, don't try to be cynical. Don't be ashamed of being a good man. The Lord will bless you abundantly, and our prayers will be like a strong fortification round you all the days of your life. Mm. You will let me have the cheque to show at the meeting, won't you? Jenny, go in and fetch a pen and ink.
Right away, General.
Do not disturb, Miss Hill. I have a fountain pen.
I'll clear a space on the table.
I should make the cheque out to the West Ham branch of the Salvation Army.
If you will kindly do so, Mr. Undershaft.
What price Salvation now, Major Barbara?
Stop! Mrs. Baines, are you really going to take this money?
Oh, why not, dear?
Why not? Do you know what my father is? Have you forgotten that Lord Saxmundham is Bodger the Whiskey Man? Do you know that the worst thing I have had to fight here is not the devil, but Bodger? Bodger, Bodger, with his whiskey, his distilleries, and his tide houses. Are you going to make our shelter another tide house for him and ask me to keep it?
Rotten drunken whiskey it is too.
My dear Barbara, alcohol is a very necessary article. It heals the sick.
It does nothing of the sort.
Well, it assists the doctor. It makes life bearable to millions of people who could not endure their existence if they were quite sober. It enables Parliament to do things at 11 at night that no sane person would do at 11 in the morning. Is it Bodger's fault that this inestimable gift is deplorably abused by less than 1% of the poor? Salvation Army, West Ham.
Barbara, will there be less drinking or more if all those poor souls we are saving come tomorrow and find the doors of our shelters shut in their faces? Lord Saxmundham gives us the money to stop drinking, to take his own business from him.
Oh, there's pure self-sacrifice on Bodger's part, clearly. Bless dear Bodger.
Dolly, you too.
I also, Mrs. Baines, may claim a little disinterestedness. Think of my business. Think of the widows and orphans, the men and lads torn to pieces with shrapnel and poisoned with lyddite, the oceans of blood, not one drop of which is shed in a really just cause. All this makes money for me. It is your work to preach peace on earth and goodwill to men.
It is.
Every convert you make is a vote against war. Yet I give you this money to help you hasten my own commercial ruin. Your check, madam.
Oh, Mr. Undershaft.
The millennium will be inaugurated by the unselfishness of Undershaft and Bodger. Oh, be joyful.
Who would have thought that any good could have come out of war and drink? And yet their profits are brought today to the feet of Salvation to do its blessed work.
Dear General, how blessed, how glorious it all is.
Let us seize this unspeakable moment. Let us march to the great meeting at once. Excuse me just an instant.
The march! We are marching!
Mr. Undershaft, have you ever seen 1,000 people fall on their knees with one impulse and pray, come with us to the meeting?
How could I refuse?
Barbara shall tell them that the army is saved, and saved through you.
But, General...
Come, everyone! You shall carry the flag, General Baines, here.
An honour!
That's it, General. Wave the flag.
And Mr. Undershaft is a gifted trombonist. He shall intone an Olympian diapason to the West Ham Salvation March. Oh. Your instrument, Mr. Undershaft.
Blow,
Machiavelli, blow.
The trumpet in Zion, Euripides. I will do my best. I could vamp a bass if I knew the tune.
It's a wedding chorus from one of Donizetti's operas, but we have converted it. Bum 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 bum.
Dolly, you're breaking my heart.
Oh, well, what's a broken heart more or less here? Dionysus' undershaft has descended. I am possessed.
Come, Barbara. I must have my dear major to carry the flag with me.
Yes, yes, major darling.
Or play the tambourine.
And give it back to Jenny. Oh,
very well. So be it. Here.
I can't come.
Not come?
Barbara, do you think I'm wrong to take the money?
No, no, no. God help you, my dear. You must. You are saving the army. Go, go, and may you have a great meeting.
Oh, but aren't you coming?
I am not.
Barbara, what are you doing?
Why are you taking your badge off? You can't be going to leave us, Major.
Father, come here. There, you have my badge. It's not much for £5,000, is it?
Wait for me, cousins.
Hurry, Father Undershaft.
Barbara, if you won't come and pray with us, promise me you will pray for us.
I can't pray now. Perhaps I shall never pray again.
Barbara.
Major.
I can't bear any more. Quick, march.
Off we go. Clear up that immenso jubilo.
I must go, Barbara, dear. You're overworked. You will be all right tomorrow. We'll never lose you. Now, Jenny, step out with the old flag. Blood and fire.
Glory, hallelujah.
My ducats and my daughter.
Money and gunpowder.
Drunkenness and murder. My God, why hast thou forsaken me?
What price salvation now, Major Barbara?
I didn't accept your money, Bill.
Snobby Price took it.
What?
It's gone, see? He didn't think I saw, but I watched him take it when he was leaving.
Oh.
Tell us, Major, what o'clock this morning was it when him, as they call Snobby Price, was saved?
About 12:30, Bill. And he pinched your pound just now. Well, you can't afford to lose it. I'll send it to you.
I ain't to be bored. You wanted my soul, did you? Well, you ain't got it.
I nearly got it, Bill. Though we've sold it back to you for £10,000.
And dearer than money.
It was worth more than money.
It's no good. You can't get round me now. I don't believe in it, and I've seen today that I was right. So long, Major Earl's granddaughter. What price salvation now? Snobby Price.
Follow, follow, I would follow Jesus anywhere, everywhere. I would follow on. Follow, follow, I would follow Jesus everywhere he leads me. I would follow on. What price salvation now?
It's on at the New London. Shall we get tickets?
Barbara, are you keen to see the Scarlet Pimpernel?
Mother, I really don't feel like going to...
Good afternoon. Oh, Lady Britt. Sarah. Barbara. Oh, I say. Barbara, you've left off your uniform.
Charles.
I'm awfully sorry, Barbara. Still, I have never shut my eyes to the fact that there is a certain amount of tosh about the Salvation Army. Now, the claims of the Church of England...
That's enough, Charles. Speak of something suited to your mental capacity.
Surely the Church of England is suited to all our capacities.
Thank you for your sympathy, Charlie. Now, go and spoon with Sarah.
How is my illness today?
I wish you wouldn't tell Charlie to do things, Barbara. He always comes straight and does them. Charlie, we're going to the cannon works at Perivale St Andrews this afternoon.
What? Your governor's shop?
Yes. Papa will be here soon.
Oh, I say.
I expected you this morning, Dolly. Didn't you guess that?
Well, I'm sorry. I've only just breakfasted.
We've just finished lunch.
Oh, you're wearing a dress, Barbara. I've never seen you in it.
Have you had one of your bad nights?
Well, actually, I had rather a good night.
In fact, one of the most remarkable nights I have ever passed.
The meeting?
After the meeting.
What were you doing?
Drinking.
Dolly!
Dolphus!
Are you joking, Dolly?
No. No, I've been making a night of it with the nominal head of this household, that's all.
Andrew made you drunk?
He only provided the wine. I think it was Dionysus who made me drunk. I told you, I was possessed.
You're not sober yet. Go home to bed at once.
I have never before ventured to reproach you, Lady Britt, but how could you marry the Prince of Darkness?
It was much more excusable to marry him than to get drunk with him. He usedn't to drink.
Oh, he doesn't now. He only sat there and completed the wreck of my moral basis, the rout of my convictions, the purchase of my soul. He cares for you, Barbara, and that is what makes him so dangerous to me.
That has nothing to do with it, Dolly. There are larger loves and diviner dreams than the fireside ones. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, that is our understanding. I know it. I hold to it. Unless he can win me on that holier ground, he may amuse me for a while, but he can get no deeper hold, strong as he is.
Keep to that, and the end will be right. Now, tell me what happened at the meeting.
It was amazing. Mrs. Baines almost died of emotion. Oh. Jenny Hill went stark mad with hysteria. But the Prince of Darkness played his trombone like a madman. Charles, its brazen roarings were like the laughter of the damned. 117 conversions took place then and there. They prayed with the most touching sincerity and gratitude for Bodger and for the anonymous donor of the £5,000. Your father would not let his name be given.
Yeah, that was rather fine of the old man. Most chaps would have wanted the advertisement.
He said all the charitable institutions would be down on him like kites on a battlefield if he gave his name.
That's Andrew all over. He never does a proper thing without giving an improper reason for it.
He convinced me that I have all my life been doing improper things for proper reasons.
Adolphus, now that Barbara has left the Salvation Army, you had better leave it too. I will not have you playing that drum in the streets. No,
your orders are already obeyed, Lady Britt.
Dolly, were you ever really in earnest about it? Would you have joined if you had never seen me?
Well, possibly, as a collector of religion.
Not as a drummer, though, you know. You are a very clear-headed, brainy chap, Dolly, and it must have been apparent to you that there is a certain amount of tosh about the
Salvation. Charles, if you must drivel, drivel like a grown-up man and not like a schoolboy.
Well, drivel is drivel, whatever a man's age.
Begging your pardon, Lady Britomart.
Morrison, what is it?
If you please, milady, Mr. Undershaft has arrived.
Please tell him to join us.
Very well, my lady.
Barbara, Sarah, go and get ready. Charles, go and tell Stephen to come here. You'll find him in the study.
Will do, Lady Britt.
Adolphus, tell them to send round the carriage.
Oh, right away.
What nonsense is this?
Mr. Undershaft, milady.
Good afternoon, my dear. Alone. How fortunate.
Oh, don't be sentimental, Andrew. Sarah must have £800 a year until Charles Lomax comes into his property. Mm. Barbara will need more and need it permanently because Adolphus hasn't any property.
I will see to it. Anything else?
I want to talk to you about Stephen.
Don't, my dear. Stephen doesn't interest me.
He does interest me. He is our son.
Do you really think so? I see nothing of myself in him and less of you.
Andrew, Stephen is an excellent son and a most steady, capable, high-minded young man. You are simply trying to find an excuse for disinheriting him.
My dear Biddy, the Undershaft tradition disinherits him.
If you will do nothing for Stephen, you are not wanted here. Go to your foundling, whoever he is, and look after him.
The fact is, Biddy...
Oh, don't call me Biddy. I don't call you Andy.
I will not call my wife Britomart. It's not good sense. Seriously, my love, the Undershaft tradition has landed me in a difficulty. I'm getting on in years, and my partner Lazarus has at last made a stand and insisted that the succession must be settled. I would say if you want to keep the foundry in the family, you had better find an eligible foundling and marry him to Barbara.
Ah, Barbara, your pet. You would sacrifice Stephen to Barbara.
Cheerfully. And you, my dear, would boil Barbara to make soup for Stephen.
Oh. Andrew, this is not a question of our likings and dislikings. It is a question of duty. It is your duty to make Stephen your...
Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon.
He knows all about the tradition, I suppose?
He does. It is what I told you the other day, Stephen.
Quite.
I understand you want to come into the cannon business.
I go into trade. Certainly not.
Oh, in that case...
Cannons are not trade, Stephen. They are enterprise.
I have no intention of becoming a man of business in any sense. I intend to devote myself to politics.
My dear boy, this is an immense relief to me. And I trust it may prove an equally good thing for the country.
I cannot allow you to throw away an enormous property like this.
Mother, there must be an end of treating me as a child, if you please.
Stephen!
Until last night, I did not take your attitude seriously because I did not think you meant it seriously. But I find now that you have left me in the dark as to matters which you should have explained to me years ago. I am extremely hurt and offended. Any further discussion of my intentions had better take place with my father, as between one man and another.
I see.
I'm sorry, Mother, that you have forced me.
Yes. That's all right, Stephen. She won't interfere with you any more. Your independence is achieved. You have won your latchkey. It is settled that you do not ask for the succession to the cannon business.
I hope it is settled that I repudiate the cannon business.
Don't be so devilishly sulky. It's boyish. Freedom should be generous. Besides, I owe you a fair start in life in exchange for disinheriting you. You can't become Prime Minister all at once. Is there anything you know or care for?
I know the difference between right and wrong.
You don't say so.
And I pretend to nothing more than any honourable English gentleman claims as his birthright.
What do you think he had better do, Andrew?
Oh, just what he wants to do. He knows nothing and he thinks he knows everything. That points clearly to a political career.
I'm sorry, sir, that you forced me to forget the respect due to you as my father. I'm an Englishman and I will not hear the government of my country insult it.
I am the government of your country. I and Lazarus. Do you suppose that you and half a dozen amateurs like you, sitting in a row in that foolish gabble shop, can govern under Shaft and Lazarus? No, my friend, you will do what pays us. You will make war when it suits us and keep peace when it doesn't. And in return, you shall have the support and applause of my newspapers and the delight of imagining that you are a great statesman. Government of your country.
Really, my dear father, it is impossible to be angry with you. It is natural for you to think that money governs England, but you must allow me to think that I know better.
And what does govern England, pray?
Character, father. Character.
Whose character? Yours or mine?
Neither yours nor mine, father. But the best elements in the English national character.
Stephen, I've found your profession for you. You're a born journalist.
The carriage is here, Mama.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Papa.
Good day, my dear Sarah. And good afternoon, Mr. Lomax.
How do you do?
Quite well after last night, Euripides, eh?
As well as can be expected.
That's right. So, Barbara, you are coming to see my death and devastation factory?
You came yesterday to see my salvation factory. I promised you a return visit.
I've been through the Woolwich Arsenal, and it gives you a ripping feeling of security, you know, to think of the lot of beggars we could kill if it came to fighting. Still, Mr. Undershaft, it must be rather an awful reflection for you, from the religious point of view, as it were. You're getting on, you know, and all that.
You don't mind Cholly's imbecility, Papa, do you?
I say.
Mr. Lomax looks at the matter in a very proper spirit, my dear.
Just so. That's all I meant, I assure you.
Are you coming, Stephen?
Well, I am rather busy. Well, yes, I'll come. That is, if there's room for me.
I could take two with me in the little motor I'm experimenting with for field use. You won't mind its being rather unfashionable. It's not painted yet, but it's bulletproof.
Oh, I say.
The carriage for me. Thank you. Barbara doesn't mind what she's seen in.
I shall enjoy to go in the car.
You coming, Dolly?
We too coming to this works department of hell? That's what I ask myself.
I've always thought of it as a sort of
pit where lost creatures with blackened faces stirred up smoky fires and were driven and tormented by my father. Is it like that, Dad?
My dear, it is a spotlessly clean and beautiful hillside town.
With a Methodist chapel? Oh, do say there's a Methodist chapel.
There are two, a primitive one and a sophisticated one. There's even an ethical society, but it is not much patronized, as my men are all strongly religious. In the high explosives sheds, they object to the presence of agnostics as unsafe.
And yet they don't object to you.
Do they obey all your orders?
I never give them any orders. When I speak to one of them, it is, well, Jones, is the baby doing well? And has Mrs. Jones made a good recovery? Nicely, thank you, sir. And that's all.
But Jones has to be kept in order. How do you maintain discipline among your men?
I don't. They do. I never meddle with them. I never bully them. I don't even bully Lazarus. I say that certain things are to be done, but I don't order anybody to do them. The result is a colossal profit which comes to me.
You really are. What I was saying yesterday.
What was he saying yesterday?
Never mind, my dear. He thinks I have made you unhappy. Have I?
Do you think I can be happy in this vulgar, silly dress? I, who have worn the uniform. Do you understand what you have done to me? Yesterday, I had a man's soul in my hand. I set him in the way of life with his face to salvation. But when we took your money, he turned back to drunkenness and derision. I will never forgive you that. If I had a child and you destroyed its body with your explosives, if you murdered Dolly with your horrible guns, I could forgive you if my forgiveness would open the gates of heaven to you. But to take a human soul from me and turn it into the soul of a wolf, that is worse than any murder.
Perivale, St. Andrews, at the sign of the sword.
Everything wonderful.
Real. Neat little white red-roofed houses. Domes, campaniles, slender chimney shafts, trees, birdsong, a babbling brook. And look, below, fat, happy trout.
There you are!
Ah, Stephen.
What a place. Why did you two leave us?
We wanted to see everything we were not intended to see. And Barbara wanted to make the men talk.
Have you found anything discreditable?
Not so far. They call him Dandy Andy, and are proud of his being a cunning old rascal. But it's all horribly, frightfully, immorally, unanswerably perfect.
Horribly, frightfully, immorally, unanswerably perfect.
Well, there's Sarah.
Heavens, what a town, isn't it? Did you see the nursing home?
The libraries and the schools.
The ballroom and the banqueting chamber in the town hall, Barbara.
I saw.
I plan to go and look at the little...
Well, have you seen everything? I'm sorry I was called away. Telegram from Manchuria.
Good news, I hope.
Very.
Another Japanese victory?
Oh, I don't know. Which side wins does not concern us here. No, the good news is that the aerial battleship is a tremendous success. At the first trial, it has wiped out a fort with 300 soldiers in it.
Dummy soldiers?
The real thing.
Father...
Well, Stephen, what do you think of the place?
Oh, magnificent. A perfect triumph of organization. I only have one misgiving about it all.
Out with it.
Well, I cannot help thinking that all this provision for every want of your workmen may sap their independence and weaken their sense of responsibility. And greatly as we enjoyed our tea at that splendid restaurant, how they gave us all that luxury... cake and jam and cream for threepence, I really cannot imagine. Still, you must remember that restaurants break up home life. Look at the continent, for instance. Are you sure that so much pampering is really good for the men's characters?
A sufficient dose of anxiety is always provided by the fact that we may be blown to smithereens at any moment.
Ah, where are you, fool?
My good fellow, you needn't get into a state of nerves. Nothing's going to happen to you. A little bit of British pluck is what you want, old chap.
Bilton, what's happened?
This gentleman walked into the high explosives shed and lit a cigarette, sir. That's all.
Ah, quite so. Mr. Lomax, would you mind giving me the rest of the matches?
Certainly. You know, these high explosives don't go off like gunpowder, except when they're in a gun. When they're spread loose, you can put a match to them without the least risk. They just burn quietly like a bit of paper. Did you know that, Undershaft? Have you ever tried?
Not on a large scale, Mr. Lomax. Bilton will give you a sample of gun cotton when you're leaving. If you ask him, you can experiment with it at home.
What?
Bilton will do nothing of the sort, Papa. I suppose it's your business to blow up the Russians and Japs, but you might really stop short of blowing up poor Cholly.
Best get back to work.
Shall we go to the office? Alas, I can't alter the weather.
Oh. You do surprise me, Father Undershaft.
Good idea.
Fine.
Mother, what glorious flowers. Let me smell them.
Andrew, you shouldn't have let me see this place.
Why, my dear?
Never mind why. You shouldn't have, that's all. To think of all this being yours, the town, the factory, and that you've kept it to yourself all these years.
It does not belong to me. I belong to it. It is the Undershaft inheritance.
Oh, it is not. Your ridiculous cannons and that noisy banging foundry may be the Undershaft inheritance, but all that plate and linen, all that furniture and those houses and orchards and gardens belong to us. They belong to me. They are not a man's business. I won't give them up. You must be out of your senses to throw them all away. And if you persist in such folly, I will call in a doctor.
Where did you get the flowers, my dear?
Your men presented them to me in your William Morris Labour Church.
Oh, it needed only that. A Labour Church.
Yes, with Morris's words in mosaic letters, 10 feet high around the dome. No man is good enough to be another man's master. Oh. The cynicism of it.
It shocked the men at first, I'm afraid. But now they take no more notice of it than of the Ten Commandments in church.
Andrew, are you trying to put me off the subject of the inheritance by profane jokes? Well, you shan't. I don't ask it any longer for Stephen. He has inherited far too much of your perversity to be fit for it. But Barbara has rights as well as Stephen. Why should not Adolphus succeed to the inheritance?
Adolphus is exactly the sort of new blood that is wanted in English business. But he's not a foundling, and there's an end of it.
Not quite. I think... mind, I'm not committing myself in any way as to my future course, but I think the foundling difficulty can be got over.
What do you mean?
I have something to say which is in the nature of a confession.
I think we had better go into my office. Come on through, everyone. Sit here, my dear.
No, I will not. I will stand for this.
As you wish. Cousins, you mentioned...
Yes, a confession. Until I met Barbara, I thought myself in the main an honourable, truthful man, because I wanted the approval of my conscience more than I wanted anything else. But the moment I saw Barbara, I wanted her far more than the approval of my conscience.
Adolphus!
It's true. You accused me yourself, Lady Britt, of joining the army to worship Barbara, and so I did. She bought my soul like a flower at a street corner. But she bought it for herself.
Dolly!
What? Not for Dionysus or another?
But Dionysus and all the others are in herself. I adored what was divine in her, and was therefore a true worshipper. But I was romantic about her too. I thought she was a woman of the people, and that a marriage with a professor of Greek would be far beyond the wildest social ambitions of her rank.
Say, old man.
Cholly, don't interrupt.
When I learnt the horrible truth...
What do you mean by the horrible truth, pray?
That she was enormously rich, that her grandfather was an earl, and that her father was the Prince of Darkness.
Really?
And that I was only an adventurer trying to catch a rich wife. Then I stooped to deceive about my birth.
Your birth? Now, Adolphus, don't dare to make up a wicked story for the sake of these wretched canons. Remember, I have seen photographs of your parents, and the Agent General for Southwestern Australia knows them personally and has assured me that they are most respectable married people.
So they are, in Australia. But here, they are outcasts. Their marriage is legal in Australia, but not in England. My mother is my father's deceased wife's sister. And in this island, I am consequently
A foundling.
Biddy, this may be a way out of the difficulty.
Stuff. A man can't make cannons any the better for being his own cousin instead of his proper self.
You are an educated man. That is against the tradition.
Well, once in 10,000 times it happens that the schoolboy is a born master of what they try to teach him. Greek has not destroyed my mind, it has nourished it.
Well, I cannot afford to be too particular. You have cornered the foundling market. You are eligible, Euripides. You are eligible.
Take care. There is an abyss of moral horror between me and your accursed aerial battleships.
Never mind the abyss for the present. Let us settle the practical details and leave your final decision open. You know that you will have to change your name. Do you object to that?
Would any man named Adolphus, any man called Dolly, object to being called something else?
Good. Now, as to money, I propose to treat you handsomely from the beginning. You shall start at 1,000 a year.
No, by heavens, Machiavelli, you shall not cheat me. You cannot do without me, and I can do without you. I must have 2,500 a year for 2 years. And at the end of that time, if I'm a failure, I go. But if I'm a success and stay on, you must give me the other 5,000.
What other 5,000?
To make the 2 years up to 5,000 a year. The 2,500 is only half pay, in case I should turn out a failure. The third year, I must have 10% on the profits.
A born businessman.
10%? Why, man, do you know what my profits are?
Enormous, I hope.
Dolly!
But, Mr. Cousins, this is a serious matter of business. You are not bringing any capital into the concern.
No capital? Is my mastery of Greek no capital? Mr. Undershaft, you have my terms. Take them or leave them.
I note your terms and I offer you half.
You call yourself a gentleman and you offer me half?
I do not call myself a gentleman, but I offer you half.
This to your future partner, your successor, your son-in-law.
You are selling your own soul, Dolly, not mine. Leave me out of the bargain, please.
I will go a step further for Barbara's sake. I will give you 3/5, but that is my last word.
Done.
Is the bargain closed, Dolly? Does your soul belong to him now?
The price is settled, that is all. The real tug of war is still to come. What about the moral question?
Oh, there is no moral question in the matter at all, Adolphus. You must simply sell cannons and weapons to people whose cause is right and just, and refuse them to foreigners and criminals.
No, none of that. You must keep the true faith of an armourer, or you don't come in here.
What on earth is the true faith of an armourer?
To give arms to all men who offer an honest price for them without respect of persons or principles.
My good Machiavelli, as to your armourer's faith, if I take my neck out of the noose of my own morality, I am not going to put it into the noose of yours. I shall sell cannons to whom I please and refuse them to whom I please.
From the moment when you become Andrew Undershaft, you will never do as you please again. Do not come here lusting for power, young man.
If power were my aim, I should not come here for it. You have no power.
None of my own, certainly.
You do not drive this place. It drives you. And what drives the place?
A will of which I am a part.
Father! Do you know what you are saying? Or are you laying a snare for my soul?
Don't listen to his metaphysics, Barbara. The place is driven by the most rascally part of society. The money hunters, the pleasure hunters, the military promotion hunters, and he is their slave.
You tire me, Euripides, with your morality mongering. Ask Barbara. She understands. Tell him, my love, what power really means.
Before I joined the Salvation Army, I was in my own power, and the consequence was that I never knew what to do with myself. When I joined it, I had not time enough for all the things I had to do.
Just so. And why was that, do you suppose?
Yesterday, I should have said, because I was in the power of God. But you came, and at the stroke of your pen in a checkbook, showed me that I was in the power of Bodger and Undershaft.
Come, come, my daughter. What do we do here when we spend years of work and thought and thousands of pounds of solid cash on a new gun or an aerial battleship that turns out just a hair's breadth wrong after all? Scrap it. If your old religion broke down yesterday, get a newer and a better one for tomorrow.
Oh, how gladly I would take a better one to my soul, but you offer me a worse one.
Justify yourself. Show me some light through the darkness of this dreadful place with its beautifully clean workshops and respectable workmen and model homes.
Cleanliness and respectability do not need justification, Barbara. They justify themselves. I see no darkness here, no dreadfulness. In your salvation shelter, I saw poverty, misery, cold and hunger.
And their souls?
I saved their souls just as I saved yours.
You saved my soul? What do you mean?
I fed you and clothed you and housed you. I took care that you should have money enough to live handsomely. I enabled Barbara to become Major Barbara. And I saved her from the crime of poverty.
Do you call poverty a crime?
The worst of crimes. There are millions of poor people. They poison us morally and physically. They kill the happiness of society. Only fools fear crime. We all fear poverty. Pah, you talk of your half-saved ruffian in West Ham. You accuse me of dragging his soul back to perdition. Well, bring him to me here, and I will drag his soul back again to salvation for you. Not by words and dreams, but by 38 shillings a week, a sound house in a handsome street, and a permanent job.
And will he be the better for that?
You know he will. Don't be a hypocrite, Barbara. It is cheap work converting starving men with a Bible in one hand and a slice of bread in the other. Try your hand on my men. Their souls are hungry because their bodies are full.
And leave the East End to starve?
I was an East Ender. I moralized and starved until one day I swore that I would be a full-fed free man at all costs, that nothing should stop me except a bullet, neither reason nor morals nor the lives of other men. I said, "Thou shalt starve ere I starve," and with that word I became free and great. That is the history of most self-made millionaires, and when it is the history of every Englishman, we shall have an England worth living in.
Andrew, your ideas are nonsense. You got oil because you were selfish and unscrupulous.
Not at all. I had the strongest scruples about poverty and starvation, but poverty and slavery have stood up for centuries to sermons and leading articles. They will not stand up to my machine guns. Don't preach at them. Don't reason with them. Kill them.
Father.
Killing? Is that your remedy for everything?
It is the final test of conviction. What about it, cousins? Come and make explosives with me. Whatever can blow men up can blow society up. The history of the world is the history of those who had courage enough to embrace this truth. Have you the courage to embrace it, Barbara?
Barbara, I positively forbid you to listen to your father's abominable wickedness. Children, come home instantly. Andrew, I am exceedingly sorry I allowed you to call on us. You are wickeder than ever. Come at once.
It is no use running away from wicked people, Mama. It does not save them.
I can see that you are going to disobey me. Sarah, are you coming home or are you not?
I dare say it's very wicked of Papa to make cannons, but I don't think I shall cut him on that account.
You must look at facts. Not that I would say a word in favour of anything wrong, but then, you see, you know, all sorts of chaps are always doing all sorts of things, and you have to fit them in somehow, don't you know? Perhaps I didn't make myself clear.
You are lucidity itself, Charles. Because Andrew is successful and has plenty of money to give to Sarah, you will flatter him and encourage him in his wickedness.
Well, where the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered, don't you know?
Precisely. By the way, may I call you Charles?
Oh, Charlie is the usual ticket.
Euripides, make up your mind.
Understand this, you old demon. You have me in a horrible dilemma. I want Barbara. I also want to avoid being a rascal.
You lust for personal righteousness, for self-approval, for what you call a good conscience, for what Barbara calls salvation, for what I call patronising people who are not so lucky as yourself.
I do not. All the poet in me recoils from being a good man, but there are things in me that I must reckon with. Love, for instance.
Love?
Father, do you love nobody?
I love my best friend.
And who is that, pray?
My bravest enemy. That is the man who keeps me up to the mark.
You know, the creature is really a sort of poet in his way. Suppose he is a great man, after all.
Come, you will suit me. Remember the words of Plato.
Plato? You dare quote Plato to me?
Plato says, my friend, that society cannot be saved until either the professors of Greek take to making gunpowder or else the makers of gunpowder become professors of Greek.
Oh, tempter. Cunning tempter. But perhaps Barbara will not marry me if I make the wrong choice.
Perhaps not.
Suppose you stop talking and make up your mind, my young friend?
But you are driving me against my nature. I hate war.
Hatred is the coward's revenge for being intimidated. Dare you make war on war? May we expect you here at 6 tomorrow morning?
I will see the whole establishment blown up with its own dynamite before I will get up at 5. My hours are healthy, rational hours, 11 to 5.
Come when you please. Before a week, you will come at 6 and stay until I turn you out for the sake of your health. My dear, let us leave these two young people to themselves for a moment. Come, Stephen. Come, Charles. Bring Sarah.
Dolly, old fellow, think before you decide. It's a huge undertaking and an enormous responsibility. All this massive business will be Greek to you.
Oh, I think it'll be much less difficult than Greek. Barbara, I'm going to accept this offer.
I thought you would.
You understand, don't you, that I had to decide without consulting you. If I'd thrown the burden of the choice on you, you would sooner or later have despised me for it.
Yes. I did not want you to sell your soul for me any more than for this inheritance.
It's not the sale of my soul that troubles me. I've sold it too often to care about that. But what I am now selling it for is neither money nor position nor comfort, but for reality and for power, not for myself alone. I want to make power for the world.
I want to make power for the world too, but it must be spiritual power.
Well, I think all power is spiritual. These cannons will not go off by themselves. The power that is made here can be wielded by all men.
Power to burn women's houses down and kill their sons and tear their husbands to pieces.
You cannot have power for good without having power for evil too. But even mother's milk nourishes murderers as well as heroes. This power, which only tears men's bodies to pieces, has never been so horribly abused as the intellectual power, the imaginative power, the poetic, religious power that can enslave men's souls. As a teacher of Greek, I gave the intellectual man weapons against the common man. I now want to give the common man weapons against the intellectual man. I love the common people. I want a democratic power strong enough to force the intellectual oligarchy to use its genius for the general good or else perish.
Is there no higher power than a weapon?
Yes, but that power can destroy the higher powers, just as a tiger can destroy a man. Therefore, man must master that power first. Your father's challenge has beaten me. Dare I make war on war? I dare. I must. I will. And now, is it all over between us?
Silly baby Dolly, how could it be?
Then you... Oh, for my drum!
Take care, Dolly, take care. If only I could get away from you and from Father and from it all.
And leave me?
Yes, you and all the other naughty, mischievous children of men. But I can't. I was happy in the Salvation Army for a moment. I escaped from the world into a paradise of enthusiasm and prayer and soul-saving. But the moment our money ran short, it all came back to Bodger. It was he who saved our people. He and the Prince of Darkness, my papa. Turning our backs on Bodger and Undershaft is turning our backs on life.
I thought you were determined to turn your back on the wicked side of life.
There is no wicked side. Life is all one. Do you know what would have happened if you had refused Papa's offer?
I wonder.
I should have given you up and married the man who accepted it. After all, my dear old mother has more sense than any of you. I felt like her when I saw this place, felt that I must have it, that never, never, never could I let it go. Only she thought it was the houses and the kitchen ranges and the linen and the china. When really it was all the human souls to be saved. That is where salvation is really wanted. And my father shall never throw it in my teeth again that my converts were bribed with bread. I have got rid of the bribe of bread. I have got rid of the bribe of heaven.
Let God's work be done for its own sake, the work he had to create us to do, because it cannot be done except by living men and women. When I die, let him be in my debt, not I in his, and let me forgive him, as becomes a woman of my rank.
Then the way of life lies through the factory of death?
Yes, through the raising of hell to heaven and of a man to God, through the unveiling of an eternal light in the valley of the shadow. Oh, did you think my courage would never come back? Did you believe that I was a deserter, that I, who have stood in the streets and taken my people to my heart and talked of the holiest and greatest things with them, could ever turn back and chatter foolishly to fashionable people about nothing in a drawing room? Never, 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 never. Major Barbara will die with the colours. Oh, and I have my dear little Dolly boy still, and he has found me my place and my work. Oh, glory, hallelujah!
Oh, my dearest, consider my delicate health. I cannot stand as much happiness as you can.
Papa, Mama, everyone, come in, please.
Barbara?
Cousins, well, what does she say?
What do you want, Barbara?
I want a house in the village to live in with Dolly.
In Major Barbara by George Bernard Shaw, Barbara was played by Eleanor Tomlinson and Adolphus Cousins by Jack Farthing. Undershaft was played by Matthew Marsh, Lady Britomart by Rebecca Front, and Stephen by Joel McCormack. Charles Lomax was played by Kieran Hodgson, Sarah by Scarlett Brooks, and Morrison by Brian Protheroe. Jenny Hill was played by Nicola Ferguson, Mrs. Baines by Susan Jameson, and Bill Walker by Ewan Bailey. Snobby Price was played by Sargon Yelder, Rummy Mitchins by A.D. Allen, and Peter Shirley by Sean Baker. The concertina was played by Colin Guthrie, and the cornet by Peter Ringrose. The director was Tracy Neal.